For more presentations like this, visit www.xenos.org.
All right, we have been going through the book of James now for the last, I don't know, month and a half or something like that. And it's a great study for people who just want to say, you know, show me what it's about. And what do I do with my Christian faith? And James just comes right alongside. He's not very abstract. And he just kind of lays it out in terms of, okay, well, here are some things then about practically living the Christian life in the real world with all of its confusion and all that kind of stuff. Just if you keep your mind focused on these things, you're going to do pretty well. And so he's talked about the nature of faith and the relationship between faith and the things that reflect our faith in the real world, the good deeds that we're called to. And we talked about that at some depth last week. Tonight, we talk about the tongue, and we're going to read some things from James that I find hilarious. And people read James differently. Some people will read James and they'd be like, you know, shocked and mortified and maybe a little afraid. I was talking to somebody recently, I can't remember who, last week or so. We were talking about, you know, if you invited James over for dinner, are you nervous? You know, is he the kind of guy that you're just worried he's going to, you know, see some problems and he's going to point them out and nothing's going to be good enough and you're going to fail? You know, a lot of people read James kind of like that. I read James differently. I think he's one of the funniest guys ever. And this is one of the funniest passages from one of the funniest guys ever. You'll see as we get into it how he describes the tongue. He starts out, he says, "Let not many of you become teachers, brothers and sisters, knowing that as such we will incur a stricter judgment." Well, that doesn't sound very funny. But what he's saying is, a matter of fact, which is that if you get up and you speak forth God's word as a teacher, then people are going to scrutinize what you have to say more than they would scrutinize, say, somebody else that you're just meeting and you're talking or whatever. There's a sort of a presumed authority that comes with teaching that leaves you open for a closer look. And that, in fact, actually is a good thing. And what James is talking about here is a protection, really, for the church. It's the same thing that Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 14, where he says, "Let the prophet speak, and then let the other people pass judgment on what they say." There's a responsibility of the whole church, in other words, to scrutinize what's put before us. And James is just sort of plugging into that, and he's saying, you know, if you, it's a good thing to want to understand the scriptures and then to explain them to people. It's an awesome privilege. It's a great opportunity. But with it comes this downside, which is that people are going to interact with what you have to say. They may not even like the way you say it, you know, and Paul complains a little bit to the Corinthians about the fact that they don't like the way he talks and they find his speech contemptible and it kind of bums him out. I kind of understand that. But what James is saying here is that there's going to be that closer view on what you have to say, and that's a good thing. And he's just warning them that's what that's about. And then he follows up and he says in verse 2, "We all stumble in many ways, and if anyone does not stumble in what he says, he is a perfect man, able to bridle the whole body as well." And so here we have everybody's downfall, your mouth. And that's what he's going to talk about here. You can be pretty together in a lot of ways, and you can avoid all the obvious moral hang-ups that people have, and you can look really good. But one thing that is so hard to control is your mouth. And so here is James's description of the tongue. He says, "Now, if we put bits into horses' mouths so that they will obey us, we direct their entire body as well." You know, you've seen that with a horse. He's like, you can move them all around just with this little thing. He says, "Look at ships also. Though they are so great and are driven by strong winds, are still directed by a very small rudder wherever the inclination of the pilot desires. So also, the tongue is a small part of the body, and yet it boasts of great things. See how great a forest is set aflame by such a small fire. Then he says, and the tongue is a fire, the very world of iniquity. The tongue is set among our members as that which defiles the entire body and sets the fire of the course of our life and is set on fire by hell. Every species of beast and bird, of reptile and creature of the sea is tamed and will be tamed by the human race. But no one can tame the tongue. It is a restless, evil, and full of deadly poison. And so there's James. And just in his James kind of way, is just exaggerating and giving us these incredible word pictures. The tongue is like the rudder of a giant ship. The tongue is like the bit you put in the horse's mouth. The tongue is like a consuming fire lit by hell itself, you know. It's hard not to remember those things. And if you do remember them, then James has succeeded, because that's what he wants you to do. He wants you to really take seriously the thought that a lot of problems happen through word of mouth. Through the mouth. And the mouth, boy, does that get us in trouble. And so what we want to do is we want to think, just as James is kind of laying this out in a topical kind of way, in a memorable kind of way, tonight we want to think also about the tongue and why that's an awesome thing to reflect on, and also some of the wisdom that James, I think, is presuming as he's coming to the table with this from the book of Proverbs. And we want to talk in positive terms about how we use our mouths. He says, With the tongue we bless the Lord, our Father, and with it we curse men who've been made in the likeness of God. From the same mouth come both blessings and cursing. My brothers and sisters, these things ought not to be this way. Does a fountain send out from the same opening both fresh and bitter water? Can a fig tree, my brothers and sisters, produce olives, or a vine produce figs? Nor can salt water produce fresh water. And so the focus here on the tongue is pretty evident, and there's something sweet about this, namely that the tongue represents the gift of language, that God has uniquely given the human beings. You know, animals grunt at each other, you know, and they bark at each other, and they make all manner of sounds. And what they are doing essentially is they're just kind of working out their instinctual programming, then through their grunting and howling and all these kinds of things, they're kind of affecting the instinctual drives of other members of their species for a variety of genetically predetermined activities. But for human beings, it's very different. Our physiology, our larynx, our tongue, our brain, the whole of how we are made by God, we are made as communication beings. And which is, of course, because we are in the image of God, uniquely in this way that God is personal. And so the gift of language is that ability not just to affect people by our grunts and barks, but to speak to them words that they can interpret and understand that reflect the deep things going on in our own hearts and minds. It's what enables us to be social beings. It's what enables us to come together and form real bonds with one another. It's what enables us to do cooperative endeavors together. It's what enables me to link up with you in a way that enables us to then express love and real relationship with one another. The gift of language is uniquely human. In our cosmos, it's human beings that are the language users. You can program computers to simulate what we do, but they're not doing what we do. And so language is a beautiful thing. As he says here, we use it to bless our Lord and Father, but we also use it to curse men made in his image. There's a problem with humanity. There's a deep spiritual and moral problem with mankind, and nothing is more evidence of that than the legacy of what we do with our mouth. The things that we say, the hateful things that we say, the way that we tear people down, the way that we invite accusation, anger, wrath, all these things are also a part of the uniqueness of man, that we're able to be this way with one another. It's an amazing thing. Words have incredible power. You know, the old saying that the pen is mightier than the sword. Well, in a certain sort of sense, that is true. Words have incredible powers. Thinking about this, you know, there are words that probably everyone in this room remembers. And maybe words that were spoken to you decades ago are still maybe fresh in your mind because somebody said something, perhaps in anger, perhaps without just thinking about it, perhaps to tease you or whatever, but it just spoke. Those words opened up the deep insecurities that you had about yourself. And it's like, oh, I really am a loser. I really am like that. And I remember things like that that go way back in my life. I also remember on the positive side, words spoken to me by people that were important in my life, words that expressed confidence in who I am and in certain capacities that I have, and that those words really emboldened me in a significant way to accomplish in my life. Words really matter. The things that we say really make a difference. I remember in 1985, that goes back a long time, the chairman of my thesis committee was my mentor, and we were disagreeing about the quality of my work. And of course I was right and he was wrong. And we squared off at a certain point. I said, you know, Bill, this is pretty good stuff. And he goes, well, yeah, it is. But you are here to serve the living God. And he is worthy of your best, not good. And, you know, that profoundly affected my life. That affected my life, that it's not my job just to succeed in the things that I kind of want to succeed in, but that what I do matters to a God who I serve. And I have never forgotten that. And it's just sort of always with me, and I'm so thankful that he took the time to say those things to me. It was awesome. Words that we remember. Words that we'd like to have back. You know, some of us are of the sort that we don't really know what we're thinking until we hear ourselves talk. But that has the disadvantage, of course, of the fact that other people also are hearing us talk. And so maybe like you, I've said things without thinking, and just as soon as they got out of my mouth, I'm like, oh, but I can't get it back. It's gone. And like a dagger, boom, right in the chest of that other person. I said something snarky, something cynical, something unguarded, something unkind. And a lot of us, you know, even in close relationships, maybe in marriage, we've just learned that there are certain words that we can use with our spouse, with people close in our life, maybe one of our children, to just bring them right down. And I'm amazed. You know, sometimes when I get involved with people's lives and we talk about some of those dynamics, to know some of the kinds of words that people are allowing themselves to use in their disagreements, things like that, that is so, so profoundly hurtful. And maybe if you're one of these kinds of people who just have that quick tongue, what James has to say here tonight, this is very important for you. This is going to be, in fact, one of the critical battlefields in the success of your relational life. And then, too, there are words that are often left unspoken. And so, just as some of us are like really quick-tongued and we do some damage that way, some of the others of us, well, we love to sit in judgment of the person who's quick with the tongue. We're just going to sit there and scoff. Yeah, what a jerk, you know, this type of thing. And our silence also then robs us of that opportunity to really make a difference. That we had an opportunity and we missed it. Why? Because we were too consumed about ourselves and we did not care about that other person. And so it was just easier for us to remain silent. We convince ourselves of the truth of the proverb that says, even the fool, when he is silent, appears to be wise. See what I'm saying? So we got some problems in these areas. I think we've got some opportunities too. And I want to kind of trace them through a little bit here this evening. He says, from the same mouth come both blessings and cursings. And so let's talk about practical spiritual relating with one another. That's what we want to get into. That's really at the backdrop of what James also is talking about here. I was thinking in terms of not just the general principle that James is establishing, but the particulars. If you go back to Proverbs, for instance, there are a number of themes that drive through that, the fool versus the wise person, and things like that. And that contrast is often made in the context of discussions about our mouth and about the tongue. So I just have been spending some time this week going through those Proverbs, and there are basically four or five kind of categories of Proverbs that relate to the tongue that I think bear on our discussion here. The first, from Proverbs 15:23, a man has joy in an apt answer, and how delightful is a timely word. So words that are fitting, you know, that's important for us, to use words that are fitting. Namely, that they, words that are fitting, provide personal encouragement in a point in time in a person's life. That's what he means by apt, timely. It's like, you know, not just something that's generally true, but true in this particular situation. It's really especially relevant to a person's life, like right now. And he says that ought to be the kind of way that we relate to one another. Fitting words, intentional words that are relevant, that are thoughtful. And that presumes, of course, that the way that we're relating to each other is not just sort of stream of consciousness or spontaneously in the moment. I mean, those things are fine. That's normal. But that there's also this other element here, that we are very intentional in the kinds of things that we say to each other. And so if we are intentional, if we're saying things that are appropriate for the time, it communicates to that person, I've been thinking about you, and when you speak, I listen. You know, so somebody has something to say, and so maybe you don't know exactly how you're going to respond to them in the moment or whatever, that's fine. But you go away, and what that person had to say kind of sunk in, and you've been mulling that over. Maybe you've been praying for this person. And so you go back to them with an apt word, an apt answer, something that says, hey, I have been thinking about you, as a matter of fact. When you say something that matters to me, and I appreciate the opportunity to be invited into your world, and I'm here to serve. That's what that's all about. That's a part of what a dynamic Christian community is when we're relating to each other in that intentional way. And so it raises this question, do you prayerfully consider what you say? Do you prayerfully consider the things that you say to your Christian brothers and sisters when you are hanging out together? Now, a lot of us, we really are great at talking about the Buckeyes, the weather, our jobs. We're so proud of our children, you know, or this thing really upsets me at work, or whatever it is, all of which is, that's fine. That's fine. But it would be interesting to have around our neck a contentometer that records and kind of identifies what it is that we find ourselves talking about. And so, you know, some of us really like to talk about ourselves a lot. And we think that other people are as interested in us as we are in us. Usually not true. Or just the trivial or whatever. And what we need to think about is am I deliberate about the thought that I want to, when I am present with God's people, that I want to bring something to the table that I've really thought about, that I've got something to say. So think about that. An apt answer. Here's another one. This is Proverbs 10, verses 20 and 21. There's a couple of points here. The tongue of the righteous is as choice silver. The lips of the righteous feed many. The lips of the righteous feed many. What it means is that what we say has the capacity to satisfy a deep hunger within. That there are physical needs that we all have that food meets, but there are also needs of our soul that only words can kind of penetrate. Needs to be encouraged, needs maybe sometimes to be corrected, needs in any event to have the way that I'm thinking and feeling mesh with what's reality. And the only way I'm able to be brought into reality is through the words of people that I've come to rely on who are able to be for me a bit of a guide in my perplexity. You see what I'm saying? And that's what the Proverbs teaches. It says, you know, when we speak to one another, it's as though we are feeding people. We're feeding one another. We are able to refresh them with a certain kind of a biblical perspective on their life. You know, we get perspective all over the place through media, through our work, just through all manner of things. We live in a system that is not value neutral. And social psychologists and advertisers who use this data are able absolutely to demonstrate that we can shape people's desires through advertising, through how we present things. We can even, I read this as recently from Wired Magazine, that had an article on this. You can actually change people's memory. The article is about this guy who is an author, he's a journalist, and he's writing about his experience growing up in Texas and how he loved those Friday night football games where he and his friends could take one of those long neck Coke bottles, you know, sit up in the bleachers and pound down their Coke. And it was just, you know, that's just so idyllic, right? And then he came to realize some years later, wait a minute, that did not happen. That could not have happened. Coke bottles like that are never allowed in the stadium. That memory is not a real memory. And he went back and he was able to figure out that he had put together a number of experiences more or less mediated by advertising itself that had shown people in similar kinds of situations drinking their Cokes or whatever. And he had just kind of claimed that for himself. Well, there are all manner of things, my friends, that we believe. There are all manner of influences competing for our affections, for our thought life. And we desperately need to have relationships where we are able, where we are willing to speak to one another in truth and in love. And so that is why the lips of the righteous feed many, because it's just like, oh, my head has just been so, you know, in the clouds. I just have been thinking about stuff that is super not helpful. And now, you know, you're kind of like bringing me back to earth. So thanks. And do we have that kind of dynamic? Do we relate to one another, you know, like that? That's what he's basically getting at. I like what Peter says in this connection. He says, whoever speaks, do it as one who is speaking the utterances of God. Well, that's a good caution for you. You're thinking about, what am I going to say? You're about to open your mouth. And then you say to yourself, wonder if this is the kind of thing God would say. it's like, well, maybe not. And maybe what's really important here is that I prayerfully consider my next move with my mouth. And just that content really matters. Here's a point that I think is really crucial for us. That in my times of reflection, in our prayer time, in our own Bible study time? Are we seeking insight also for other people? For other people. Many people in this room, and I include myself, have sat through a Bible teaching, and we have thought to ourselves, man, that was awesome for this person over here. You know what I mean? I wish they were here to hear that, we say to ourselves. Well, you know, that's great, except that, you know, see, you're in their life. And you have that opportunity to prayerfully involve yourself in Bible study so that as you are praying and you're thinking, Lord, how can I serve this person that I've come to care about? That through our Bible study and through our prayer, you know, there's a poignancy to the scriptures that really kind of dawns on us. And we're like, oh, man, that is so true. And I can't wait for the opportunity to share this then with my friend who I know has difficulty in this area. This would be encouraging to them. It might straighten some things out in their life. And so there is this deal here. Content is very important in our relationships with one another. It is what we feed on. And it is for one another, that's our responsibility to stand in there and have that kind of role. Okay, here's another thing to think about along these lines. If our words are food for the many, what kind of nutrition are you giving up? Is the kind of things that you have to say sustaining in the lives of the people you know? Or is it like, you know, toxic food, or is it like a constant diet of junk food or whatever? You know, that's something you ought to consider. Am I putting stuff out there that's really sustaining to this person's soul? Am I involved with them in that way? Or am I just collapsing into the superficial, into the banal, into the whatever's happening now? And we just like it on the surface because it's all comfortable on the surface, and I've got an issue here. I need to understand, Lord, are you calling me now to take responsibility to inject a little reality into this relationship, into this context that we're in? Things like that. Okay, here's another point. He says in Proverbs 16:24, pleasant words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and healing to the bones. Well, words that heal are very important words. That biblical truth speaks to our brokenness. That's the reality is, folks, we are all kind of twisted and beat up people. We live in a fallen world. It's not the way God intended. It's alienated from God. And that has affected all of us. You're affected by that. I'm affected by that. There are things in our hearts that are just plain wrong. There are choices that we have made that have really directed the course of our life down a path that is super not cool, that is painful, that is hurtful to ourselves and to other people. And we are really broken people from the Bible's point of view. We're not just kind of marred and we can brush paint it and make it all look good. We're way past that. We're way past that. Once we are at an adult age, we got some real stuff in our lives, real brokenness, real habits of our heart that sometimes we're not even consciously aware of, that are just selfish and that are wrong and that are just squeezing the life out of people around us that we care about. We wonder how come, you know, we don't have that closeness that we once did or whatever. You know, and the reason is because of you, that's why, or me, or how about this, how about both of us? We just are both like, you know, empty sponges trying to seek life from one another. We are broken, and the author of the Proverbs says that words heal that brokenness. It's what Paul says in Colossians 4, verse 6, he says, let your speech always be with grace, as though seasoned with salt, so that you know how to respond to each person. You know, the solution for brokenness, for alienation, for guilt that's unresolved, for that sense of shame that we may feel in relationships where we know we've done wrong. The solution to that is grace. That is God's solution for us all. Grace is the triumph of mercy and the adequacy of Christ's sacrifice. And this is a very important point, folks, here tonight. The central need in the life of every human being is to personally experience the grace of God. The proclamation of the Bible, which resonates with experience, is that we are guilty, we're alienated from God, and we are unable to make ourselves adequate to a holy God. We can't. It's too late for that. There's nothing, there's no stairway to heaven that we can climb. And the good news of the scriptures is that God knows that, and that God has in fact dealt with that problem personally, that he has entered into the theater of this broken world, and he has taken upon himself in the cross the guilt of all of humanity. He's taken on your sin. And he has said, there's no way that you can pay for this yourself. It would take forever for you to pay for this. I mean, if you want to pay for it, there is hell awaiting. You can go there. But please don't. You don't need to. All you need to do is entrust me and the adequacy of my sacrifice, my life, for the guilt that you carry. And it is the cross of Christ that is the triumph of God's mercy over our sin. He has taken judgment upon himself so that you don't have to experience that judgment. And as we were talking about last week, it's simply presenting you then with a decision. Will you trust your life to me? Will you say, yes, I want that sacrifice to deal with my guilt before God? And that's the Christian message. That's all it is. And it's just approaching God with that level of simplicity and candor. But it goes on, see, and the Christian life is a life where we are living out grace, that the adequacy of Christ's sacrifice is such that though we continue in our broken ways, in our sinful habits, in all the stuff that you are and that I am, that God, through the cross, we are absolved of the ultimate consequences of that. We will not be judged. But we also, by the grace of God, his grace enables us to experience his forgiveness, his reconciliation, his redemption of our lives in the moment-by-moment context where we come to trust him with the particulars of our own failed way. And so there is real healing that happens in the life of a person who comes to that place in life as a believer in Jesus Christ, as a Christian, to say, I've been carrying this burden for a long time. I'm a bitter man. I'm a man who loves to carry anger towards other people. It makes me feel better about myself and affix the blame squarely on them. I'm whatever kind of person. And God in his mercy is calling out to us to say, you know, you need to admit that is just comes right out of the corruption of your own twisted, bespotted, ulcerous little heart. And to trust me to rebuild your life on the basis of my complete acceptance of you. Because I accept you, because I love you, I'm not afraid of your sin. I'm able to move toward you to say, let's build together something that's real. Let's replace this way of relating with something that's satisfying and that's real and that is from God. And those are words that heal. Let's limp through life together. Let's learn together what does it mean for us to trust Christ with these terrible things that weigh us down. These habits, these inclinations, these values, all kinds of things. And words speak to those things. They heal. You see someone who is at their worst and we say, brother, you're at your worst. But I love you. And God loves you. And your acceptability in God's eyes and in mine has not changed a bit. The cross of Christ is adequate because I fully accept who you are. Let's understand this thing. Let's move beyond this to something that's life-giving and real. That is words that heal. Will you graciously move toward where things are broken in one another's lives? That's a decision that you need to make. Oh, I like to just, you know, I don't like to cause waves. I don't want to get in there and where I'm not wanted. Now, there's every manner of excuse possible. But maybe the real truth is I'm just too selfish to care about what's wrong with that person. How about just that? I'm too consumed with myself to have room in my heart for them. You know, and the words that heal come from people who are willing to get alongside really broken people. Because God's moved alongside them. God's been gracious and God's been merciful to me. So it would just be inconsistent for me to withhold that same kind of graciousness and affection and acceptance to that other person. See what I'm saying? And then to help them understand the way forward in this very difficult area of their life. Those are words that heal. And there are words that heal that are also sweet to the soul. I love that. Words that are sweet. And that's just a great description. Words that elevate people's perspective. Paul puts it like this. He says, if there's any excellence and anything worthy of praise, here's a suggestion. Dwell on these things. Where's your head at? Because where your head's at is going to determine where your mouth goes. You see? And so we got to have our head into the things that are of excellence, he says, the things that are cool, the things of God, the things that we can be excited about. Are your words often cynical and unbelieving? Mine are. I mean, I just got to admit, this is a real struggle in my life. I'm a cynical guy. I think of things from a very naturalistic perspective. I think about the things that are explained by cause and effect, not the product of the miraculous hand of God. I think about what's wrong. Oh, I can look at a glass and say, it's half full of toxic filth. And I'm not alone in that, man. It's a cynical culture, and most of you here are very cynical people. Which is to say that basically we don't believe in the ongoing, real work of God even in our midst. We can't even see the really sweet things that are going on in the lives of people around us because we're just so cynical. They pass us by. They pass us by. I was thinking about that. A number of people here in this room have survived cancer over the last few years. Cancer. Deadly stuff. And thinking about this, you know, there's something remarkable about that. God alone has the authority to check off life and death. Did you know that? God alone is the one who names a lifespan. He has to agree to cooperate with the cause and effect of the material world that we live in. And he has preserved the lives of many people. And what that means is that he's not done with you. He has more for you to accomplish, more of him for you to know, more ways for you to make a real difference in your life for him. We're so cynical, we just don't even see the amazing things that God continues to do in our lives. Keep your mind pasted in the things above. Think of things from God's perspective, through God's lens, and then you will have something to say that is sweet to the people who hear you. Instead of that bitter, eesh. When people listen to me, sometimes they go, eesh. They go, eesh. They're like biting into a lemon. Gah. I see you're nodding in agreement. You're supposed to say, oh, no, you're not that bad. I'm a whole lot worse. And just this is such a very important thing, that our words, if our head is where it needs to be, are going to provide hope, that our lives are under God's sovereign care. You know, is that what we are communicating? Is that what rolls off our tongue to the people in our life, this hope that, yes, God is in control of your life? It's as hard as it is, as deep as that suffering may go, it is still in God's hands, that there is reason for hope. This isn't all there is. That there is a place for expressing gratitude for God's goodness. And this is something we can all lead in this area way better than we do. You know, it's the mark of the cynic that cannot sit down on a consistent basis to say, there are so many things for me to be thankful for, I don't know where to start. So you go, okay, I'm breathing. I'm thankful for that. I'm not in hell. That's a good day. Which means that God has treated me with mercy and goodness. There are people in my life that I haven't so completely alienated by my sinfulness that they still want to be my friends. That's a good thing. I'm thankful for that. They haven't treated me according to my credentials. I've got a roof over my head, food in my mouth. I've got all kind of things that are going for me. And see, if we are starting from that place, the perspective of the things above, life from God's perspective, and we have that sense of real gratitude, that's going to enable us then to move in our conversations with other people. The trivial is interesting, but what really is sweet and cool is to get in there and just to share, here's the things that God is doing that I'm really thankful for. I just want you to know it. You know what? That's going to have a stimulating effect on that other person, and they're going to be able to kind of see things from that perspective as well. And it has that good, contagious, kind of leavening effect on a whole group of people. And this is the kind of dynamic that really gives life. Finally, words that make peace. I like this. A gentle answer turns away wrath, according to Proverbs 15, verses 1 and 2. Which means that there are words that restore broken relationships. And, you know, that's just something that's, if you are not in close contact living with a perfect person, unlike me, no, she's not perfect, but she's close. Anyway, the point is, imperfect people in close contact equals conflict, equals problems, equals not getting along. And you know what that's like. And so anger comes up, and the proverb is saying, you know, speaking gently means speaking in humility and kindness. The person's coming at you, I'm really mad. You know, you left the dog out again or whatever it is. Oh yeah, well it's your responsibility. You know, that's how it goes sometimes for some people. Usually it's a lot more dry and cynical. Yeah. This kind of thing. But a gentle answer turns, you know, you're right. And you know, I have blown it. I agree. And thank you so much for bringing this grievous act to my attention. That sounds a little too cynical, doesn't it? Okay. It's instinctual, I'm telling you. Try again. Yes, you're right. Okay, next point. How about being the first to apologize and to forgive? I'm sorry. You're right. And I'm sorry. And will you, you know, that. So hard to say, I'm guilty, will you forgive me? We want people to understand us, not to forgive us, right? We want them to understand why we did this thing so that they'll get it and get us. Well, there's a place for that, but not before this, which is simply to say, I blew it and I'm sorry, and will you please forgive me? Try that out for size. When's the last, do you remember doing this anytime recently? I hope you do. A gentle answer seeks common ground. You know, you're right, forgive me, I'm sorry. But, you know, this problem we're having, it doesn't define who we are, and it doesn't define our relationship. It feels weighty right now. It feels like this is just, you know, painful. But let's go to that place that we have real common ground. We have a God who loves us, in whose image we're made. He's given us a spirit that we share together as brothers and sisters in the body of Christ before we're husbands and wife in marriage, for instance. And we have real basis then to just appropriate that love and that forgiveness that God has for us in this relationship, and we can build from here. We've got plenty of common ground, and that's the gentle word. The ungentle word is to take sides and to lob our complaints over the wall, and so that we're just not even hearing one another. It's very bad. So let's just conclude with some thoughts here. Are you inclined to gossip, to take sides, to rush to judgment with people? Well, yes, you are. And so in that sense, your answers are not gentle. They're not turning away wrath. They're resonating with wrath. They are taking up people's offense. They are continuing to divide people from one another. Bad news. Unhelpful. Let's apply this here. We've got an opportunity. We've got an opportunity with our mouth to do some good. I like what Paul says in 1 Corinthians 14. We're going to talk about that because it summarizes this concept right here, that our experience in Christian community can be dynamic, can be energizing, can be effective. To be in a context of people who understand James's teaching about the tongue and understands the Proverbs teaching about the tongue is in a position to create a climate, to create a fellowship environment that is just sweet, because people are thinking about how can I serve with what I have to say, and we're showing up prepared and we're energized by the things that we're learning that we want to share, and that is effective. And for some of us, we're finding ourselves passive. Passive, we're not really moving in the direction that we've been describing here. And for us, our experience with our brothers and sisters is far from being dynamic, energizing, and effective. It's kind of disengaged. We're not that close. Because it's really only things that matter that draw us close. Our experience is pretty forgettable and boring. And my friends, we can do something about that. We can do something about that. It begins with each one of us. I like it here. He says in 1 Corinthians 14:26, when you get together, each one has a psalm, a teaching, a revelation, that is to say, a personal insight that God has given you as you have interacted with him in prayer and in his word. That's what the revelation is. A tongue or its interpretation. Let everything be done to build one another up. Wow, man, if we just got that down, we would be in a great place. And this kind of brings together the whole idea of what we do with our words. We come together, he says, each one, not just some, each one. I've got a psalm, you know, something I've been meditating on. It's in my heart and it's in my mind. That's something I can share. I don't have to be a Bible scholar or something like that. I just have to be a person who's interacting with God. Somebody's going to come with a teaching. Watch out, they'll incur a stricter judgment. A revelation. Just, you know, just I strongly have this impression that God has put something on my heart. I want to share that with you, some insight that I've gotten from him. Let everything be done to build one another up. Each one of us comes to the table with that desire to serve. Bring something worth hearing. That means that some of us are going to have to, like, work something out here. We're going to have to turn from a self-focus. Meaning that what we're really concerned about is me. How do I feel? How do I compare to others? You know, this type of thing. That kind of self-focus leads to silence because we've already concluded I don't have anything worth hearing. Or maybe we're silent just because we've already decided they're not worth sharing things with. But there's a lot of silence that goes on in our relationships in our home churches and in our closer relationships, or we're focusing just really only on the trivial. I think the trivial is good. I do. I mean, believe me, I do. I love talking about music. I love talking about interesting places and people in the world, and there are all manner of things that are just, you know, they're interesting in their own right, and that's good. Christians should not be these narrow-minded, monolithic, you know, let's just talk about the Bible, you know, this type of thing. We need to be broad in our experience and broad in the way we communicate, but at the heart of it, we've got to be able to transcend the trivial, how's the weather, how's it going, in some kind of completely disinterested way, and to really offer up something that might be real food for the people that we're with. I don't know what to say, you say. Well, how about asking a question, I say? Well, I didn't really come prepared to share with you anything tonight. Sorry that I'm that selfish, but I will ask you, how's it going? And I really mean that. What's been going on in your life? Maybe there are some things that I could pray for you for. And to follow up the next time you meet, how's it going with this thing? And maybe the Lord has impressed some things on my heart between the last time and this time that I can actually say something about that. The Boy Scouts have told us, be prepared. And I say to you, because that's really good. And see, if we're a group of people and we're coming together like this, man, there's just that sense of life, you know, and it's exciting to be around people who want to share, who are coming because they've got something to give, not because they're sitting there like the increasingly growing fungus on a log waiting to be nourished by the elements. And man, some of you are kind of fungal. F- fungeal, not fun. And why don't you just change that? Why don't you just turn that around? This is not rocket science. This is actually something real simple. How about just, you know, at some point in your week, get before God with some content that you can then share, even if it's a sentence or even a phrase with somebody. And see, that's just going to create that dynamic that's really sweet. Build a truth-centered relationship. Somebody that you can come alongside and in an ongoing way, you can share the things that God has taught you, the things that you are learning, the things that are important to you. And they can share those things with you. And that just, you know, you form this kind of partnership. And it's just really sweet when we live like that. And so here, this whole thing is just about the tongue. And so I've talked long enough.
This study was recorded at Xenos Christian Fellowship and is copyrighted. You may freely copy and distribute it as long as you keep it intact and do not sell it.